Welcome back to Good Food on KCRW. I'm Evan Kleiman. Humans love tinkering, and fermenting food is probably one of the oldest ways our ancestors played around with their environment. As we know from our love affair with sourdough breads, yeasts are everywhere, and putting them to good use to transform what we eat is a fascinating endeavor. But noted wild food researcher Pascal Baudard takes fermentation a step farther by using the technique with material he forages. Hi.
Bonjour.
It's always so great to check in with you and find out what crazy wild man experiments you've been doing.
It is a bit crazy in a good way.
In a good way. Everything is always so delicious. You've been on this adventure of exploring the natural world and creating delicious foodstuffs with foraged materials, what you call wildcrafting.
Right.
But what came first, your love of foraging or an appreciation for fermented foods?
The love of nature. That's really what came out first. And then a passion for the flavor that you cannot get anywhere else. What I call the true flavor of the land. It doesn't matter where it is, Belgium, I was in Scotland, you know, just the true flavor of the land.
So these days, so many of us have like stepped into the brine and played around with krauts and kimchi, but picking something wild might seem kind of edgy. So where do we start?
It's super easy. One of the most common plants that you find in the wild around here would be mustard. We are loaded with wild mustard. All the hills in May are turning yellow because of wild mustard. All invasive, by the way. Nobody's doing anything with it. It's from the brassica family. It's a perfect candidate for fermentation. And because it's invasive, I like to use every single part of it, from roots to stems to leaves to flowers and to seeds, to make mustard.
So do you make like a mustard kraut?
Yes, I call that the master kraut. Mustard kraut, and it's basically like, you know, you can start very simple, and the book actually starts super simple with mixing like maybe 15% of mustard, and then you keep moving through the book, and you're going to get more and more extreme a little bit.
So the base is still cabbage at sort of this kind of 101 wild fermenting.
In the beginning of the book, we're going to start working with kimchi base, sauerkraut base. So we keep it simple. And it's kind of an invitation for the reader to start exploring bit, but by gradient. And all the plants that I use in the book are really the most common wild edible that you're going to find in your yards or close to nature. And I would say like 95% of them are what we consider weeds and invasive.
So can we make a dandelion kraut?
Totally.
And what kind of flavor does dandelion have once it's fermented? How does it transform?
See, dandelion is a little bit better if you do like a kimchi kind of things. I like to mix things together. So dandelion has a base of bitterness, but also earthy. So you mix that with different spice, a little bit of curry, a little bit of chili, a little bit of garlic. You can even add, you know, herb de Provence if you wanted to, or Italian herb. So you can really start experimenting and mix it, but you actually get flavor that you don't get anywhere else. I mean, dandelion is sold now, but, you know.
But it's still different than the kind we would pull out of our
yards. You're not going to find a dandelion kimchi or dandelion sauerkraut anywhere, that's for sure.
And when you use these plants, the mustard and the dandelion, for example, are we chopping up the whole thing or are we just using the leaves?
It really depends on the texture of the plant. For example, black mustard, which you find like, you know, over the hills in like Thousand Oaks, and it's really covering everything over there. The leaves are okay. You can actually ferment the whole leaf. It's a little bit chewy, which is an interesting texture. We're not used to it anymore. If you don't like chewy, you can use a knife technique that we call chiffonade, where you cut it in like very fine layers. The one that we have locally where I live near Pasadena is the Mediterranean mustard. That one's a little bit more tough, but interesting broccoli flavor. And that one you will need to chop it a little bit.
So interesting. In the process of working on these recipes and walking through the forests and experimenting, were there some plants that were less successful?
Yes, nasturtium. My God, that was gross. I try that one. I try fermenting that one. I really, because I love the flavor. And man, when I fermented it, that was bad. Stinging nettle is another one. I wanted to do a paste, like a fermented paste of stinging nettle. And when I opened it, it was the sensation of falling headfirst into a cow pie. I remember that as a kid. It did happen to me. So I've done mistake. I mean, not mistake, like thing that didn't work. They're not in the book. But yes, that was interesting.
So every time you come to visit me, you bring me a tiny little precious jar of wild
mustard seeds.
Of wild mustard.
Yeah, Dijon, wild Dijon.
It is truly the best mustard I've ever tasted in my life, and I almost eat it just out of the jar, like quarter teaspoon by quarter teaspoon until it's gone. What makes that so special? Just the difference of the wild seed?
The difference of the wild. And I can tell you, I touch about it at the end of the book, but I'm also in a new journey a little bit, because the more I get experience of dealing with wild plant, the more I'm a little bit frustrated by the sense that all those wild plants are considered invasive and non-native, and they are not used whatsoever. They may be cropped in different countries, but here locally, we only look at them as weeds. And I tell you, if you take a look at the amount of wild food that is quote-unquote invasive, it's probably the biggest food waste in Los Angeles. Food waste is so, like, trendy right now, but nobody's looking at this. I mean, you have hundreds of thousands of acres of wild mustard. Nobody's doing anything with it. And you only have two solutions. It's always spraying chemicals, herbicides, or you do habitat restoration and you just throw away all the resource. And what I'm trying to do with this book and also with what I do is to look at environmental solution, like making food as part of the environmental solution for all those non-native and invasive. And that's kind of like my journey right now.
One of the things in your journey that I've been most fascinated about, and I've been lucky enough to taste them, and they're fantastic, are your plant-based cheeses.
Right.
And I remember when you first started this journey, I thought, this man is going to kill himself. But instead, you really have come up with something that's so beautiful.
Yeah.
And really shows off the environment and the way you finish them.
Yes.
So could you describe a little bit about your process?
So it's basically lacto-fermented cheese, and you can make cheese with acorn, you can make cheese with all kinds of different walnuts that you find, including chestnuts. And the basic principle is super simple. You make a paste, and in order to make a paste, usually you add water in a Vitamix. You can use a stone grinder too, by the way. But instead of using water, I will use the juice of like a sauerkraut juice or brine or kimchi brine or whatever. And then I will grind my nuts, make a paste out of it, and it will start fermenting automatically because I've introduced the lactobacteria in it. I make it a little bit too salty, which is good. The bacteria like salt too. And then I put them into a towel and put a weight on it so it squeezes out the excess juice. After 2 or 3 days of fermentation, I remove the cheese and then I shape it. And everything is about the crust. Like I always say, a good relationship is based on trust, and with the cheese, it's based on crust. I take wild herbs. I will take all kinds of leaves and all kinds of different stuff and create those really beautiful crust. That kind of represents what the cheese is all about. So they're very, very, very pretty, but they are also very, 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 very good. And inside you're going to put flavoring, like a little bit of cheese flavoring, so nutritional yeast, a little bit of miso maybe. I'm going to use herbs powder, wild seeds sometime, aromatic plant. It's kind of like each cheese is special. It's a little bit of a piece of art.
Another thing that I found really moving that you talk about in the book is when fires swept through the area that you used for foraging and for classes, for taking so many of your walks with students, and how you sat there and looked at this area that was just devastated.
Oh my God, yes, it was a desert. And then?
And then?
And then I say, well, what can I do? And I love it. I always look at, I love challenges. Challenges make me, for whatever reason, they make me more creative. And I start looking at ashes. I'm like, well, I'm making cheese right now. ashes are used by French, you know, on top of cheese to avoid mold. So I started foraging different ashes, and I collected ashes from oak trees, ashes from willow trees, and all kinds of different stuff, and started playing with it on my cheese.
But that log?
Oh, the log, fermenting in the log, too. I was also super interested. I had nothing beside ashes and logs, really, at that point. And they cut, you know, they were cutting different trees that were about to fall down, and there was this beautiful log, oak log. And I realized that, you know, in France and Belgium, we are going to age our wine or beer in, you know, oak barrels because of the flavors that the oak can impart. And I became fascinated. I'm like, why not fermenting in an oak barrel? So I created this oak barrel out of this branch, and I started fermenting in it. And my God, it was so different. You get this kind of like oaky flavor a little bit in a good way. I mean, I don't know. I think oak has like more than 150 compound, flavorful compound in it. You can taste the wood in a good way, and you can taste also the fire in a good way. You know, it was fascinating. I loved it.
Well, we love you, Pascal.
Thank you.
Pascal Baudard is a wild food researcher and instructor in traditional food preparation and techniques. His latest book is Wild Fermentation. That is it for our show this week. If you missed any of it, listen on our website or in KCRW's mobile app. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify. And as always, leave us a review if you like the show. My thanks to the Good Food team, Jillian Ferguson, Laurel Garcia, Joseph Stone, and Desmond Taylor. Special thanks to Laura Kondarajan, Amy Ta, and Kenny Ng. I'm Evan Kleinman. Stay healthy, everybody, and I'll be back next week with a new episode of Good Food.